I bring to the core of the digestive physiology using beef cattle as a model. And then within this idea, we can foster the assessments for new molecules for being utilized pre-treatments, pre and post animal consumption. So things that would be affecting the feeds, things that would be affecting ruminal microbiota, perhaps ruminal tissue, perhaps digestive tract tissue, and kinetics of digestion. And again, using beef cattle as a model for this assessment, but not limited to it.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the feed science industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead of today's episode. So today it is a great pleasure for me to be the host with of the Feed Science Podcast with Dr. Joan Sarturi, who is an associate professor of Texas Tech University. Dr. Sarturi, welcome. So to hit it off a little bit, just can you please just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you ended up being there, a professor at Texas Tech?
Absolutely. Thank you again, Carlos. Thank you for the triggering this conversation and for inviting me for this show. I have been excitedly waiting for this opportunity. So thank you very much for making that a reality and engage with your public. So my name is Joan Sarturi. I've been at Texas Tech for approximately 13 years now, a little bit over 13 years. And I like to say that this was my first professional job, let's put this way, and I hope it will be my last one. So I've been, we all strive for continue our work over here. I got a little diverse background on how I end up getting here at Texas Tech. So I actually, by training, I'm a veterinarian. And right after vet school, I end up realizing that I knew very little about the ingredients that these animals were consuming. And we could prevent a lot of things if we could engage in more knowledge on how these feeds are produced, right? So I ended up getting a master degree in agronomy. And that opened a new, like a can of worms for me, a new effort, because I was exposed to a lot of things that I really didn't get a chance to be trained in vet school. And that what connected me with research. So from there, that was actually still in Brazil, where I'm originally from, my master's degree at the University of São Paulo at Exalc. And then from there, I got connected to the University of Nebraska, where I went to work with, put these two things together in a feedlot setting, in a more confined systems with beef cattle. And that's where I got my training, my PhD. And then I start to move a little bit further south from Nebraska, from Lincoln, Nebraska, right in the middle of the country, towards to a little further south. Got a opportunity to do a postdoc at Texas A&M AgriLife. My former bosses over there were Dr. James McDonald. Nowadays, he's at Nebraska. Dr. Ted McCollum as well. He's retired now, but he's very active. Let's put that way. A lot of people know him. And then I was blessed with this opportunity when I was just about to finish my postdoc training, which could have been extended. We always know that. But this opportunity at Texas Tech, where they combined a teaching with a research, with an outreach and engagement, in which for me was a perfect setting. I was very blessed with the position. And I've been here for the past couple of years developing my program. So that's pretty much how I end up here in this position, but still striving to keep these connections alive. And I always feel like as more diverse we can get, more conversations we can trigger. So that's I like to strive these multiple connections.
Great. No, that sounds very interesting. It seems definitely that you have a very diverse background, veterinarian, agronomy, and then of course animal science, you know, and of course great schools, all of them, And, you know, so and great school to work there in Texas Tech. And, you know, being Kansas State University, we relate a lot of Texas Tech due to the beef cattle, you know, and being the same academic conference. So that's great. We do have a lot of very strong connections on that. So first of all, of course, as we move along for our audience, comment if you have any questions, and we'll make sure to get them to Dr. Sarturi to of course, answer them later on. So as we move along, can you please tell us a little bit your main focus on your research work, and how does that apply overall on your day-to-day, on your overall laboratory and I think field work too?
Yes. So this training, this diverse background, let's put this way, it's there are two things that kind of can bring us. Is one is the opportunity to be broad and work in several things. That's a great thing that can happen. And the other one, it's very easy for you to end up losing focus, right? Because it can always like a double-edged sword on the way. But we try to foster for the positive aspect of it. And everything we do here is basically related to digestive physiology. And what I try to empower this main core area is with a collaboration, so then we can make connections between digestive physiology and using beef cattle as a model for this, right? Doesn't mean that I work only with beef cattle, collaborations with equine and some companion animals sometimes. But I bring to the core of the digestive physiology using beef cattle as a model, and then within this idea, we can foster the assessments for new molecules, for being utilized pre-treatments, pre- and post-animal consumption. So things that would be affecting the feeds, things that would be affecting ruminal microbiota, perhaps ruminal tissue, perhaps digestive tract tissue, and kinetics of digestion. And again, using beef cattle as a model for this assessment, but not limited to it. I'm very passionate about use of alternative products. So I can always connect to some of my graduate students. Once in a while, we kind of go back to the roots again and say, okay, buy products. Let's see how can we better utilize, how can we assess, how can we use these techniques that are available nowadays to actually represent the reliable measurements for these byproducts, because we like to recycle a lot of these techniques that have been initially developed actually for forages, right? And so again, assessing byproducts and how can we implement these strategies and things. But at the core, at the center, on the going in the realm of digestive physiology. So more recently, through cells of digestive tract and some of our recent collaborations on that as well. Again, it makes me dangerous in several of these arenas, but certainly capable to connect these different groups and within this area of expertise with bringing back to the digestive physiology, because perhaps it's biased me saying that because I work with this, but a lot of things start right there, even before absorption or before tissues are capable to absorb things. And that's where we focus on. So more of the animals surgically prepared. Sometimes I frustrate some of my students, so that's why they do internships with me before they join my graduate program, because we like to answer a lot of the why questions, rather than directly what happens. So which that brings more things inside the lab, more of these basic models on the basic type of research.
So very interesting. I mean, you're doing, of course, like very scientific work that I think is, of course, very helpful. So I see, of course, you know, everything related to the digestive tract, but also you talk a little bit about byproducts. And of course, you know, when you said to your grad students that you request them a little bit to do an intern before, which I think is great, by the way, I do that a little bit too with my own due to the, I have a little bit kind of like a diverse background similar to yours in a way. But tell us a little bit about, just to start off a little, on what will be the typical background of your grad students that are interested to work. And then we could maybe follow on that on the, because I'm interested to hear a little bit of some examples of your byproducts and things like that. Of course, putting my hat as a feed science person.
Quite a diverse background from the students as well. Perhaps I end up attracting that. I really foster collaborations. And for me, collaborations, it has to start from the ground up. So most of these people that I collaborate in the industry and in academia, we consolidate these through training, through developing people, right? I like to say that we are in the people development business, right? Because we are empowering the next generation, right?
Absolutely.
And I hope these students will apply for my position one day so that I can retire, right, one day. So, and I am being capable to put a seed over that and prepare them for that next level. But so a lot of my graduate students are agronomists, a few of them veterinarians, animal science, I would say the majority. I would say a lot of people in education type of more generic type of training. And in the internship or residency program, because most of them do this passage here with us before they start graduate school, are people that have already graduated. So I like to call a residency program because they are already professionals, right? But they get a chance to know more about the things that we develop. They get to know more about a little bit more about the dynamics of the team on the what they're going to be exposed to and how can they collaborate to this team. And at the same time, if we flip the coin, exactly the same items towards to them, it has to be reciprocal, right? So are we feeding their future efforts? Are we feeding the passion they have? Are we feeding the excitement they have because they will have to spend a couple of years with us? And that's the chance they have to see, you know what, this will be mutual. And I have many more residents than I have graduate students. So which that means that these residents end up naturally figuring out that, you know what, we don't have to be enemies by any means. However, I would like to focus more on something that is more applied or something that is more towards to the managerial side of things. And that's okay if they can figure out that in advance. And I feel like we are collaborating. We are being reciprocally positive in that kind of conversation because they can move to their next step in their lives and not be stuck with us being miserable for 2 or 3 or maybe 5 years if they go to a PhD program, right? So they have a chance to identify that. And we continue friends, right? Even when they end up deciding that perhaps they want to follow a different path. So we continue friends. So I really like, so this is not a rule at Texas Tech by any means. Don't take me wrong. We all do a little bit different over here, the way we recruit and we set up our teams. But I have been for the past 13 years having getting a very good feedback as far as the people that end up engaging with me and pursuing a career. And even these people that decide to go a different path, they end up keeping the connections. Those are my tentacles, right, in other places. But we still collaborate somehow because within that period, even though they didn't decide to continue in graduate school, we had a positive interaction, a positive experience. And they feel like I participate in their mentorship in their academic and professional life, and I take that with a very big pride.
No, and I agree with you. I mean, it's tough. For some students or professionals or individuals, whatever you want to call them, to reach a point that what do I do next? You know, of course, it depends on many things. If you have needs and things like that, you maybe have to hurry up in your career, but. It is tough now these days to decide where to go. And at least I see this residence internship program a very good opportunity for people to decide, okay, really, I want to go. Because I have seen both concept of people that come out of the undergrad program here at Kansas State to say, like, I don't want to have anything to do with grad school. And maybe they do have potential. Or the other way, that they might want to just go directly to grad school And maybe they don't know really if they want to stay the whole time or that's the path that they should take. So I always recommend this type of things too for my students and people that ask me. So I think you're doing a fantastic job in mentoring. And of course, for our audience, please like us. Give us a thumbs up there if you like this podcast. So Dr. Satori, so very important what you're doing there. Let's dive a little bit more into the research component. Tell us a little bit of examples about your program there on the byproducts. And then, of course, we will move a little bit more into the histological, ruminal, cellular integrity there. And also, maybe while you're explaining all this, talk a little bit about collaboration. And I'm pointing it out because when you're in academia or even in the public-private enterprises, you know, it is very important to collaborate, even in the private industry too. You know, we all have skills, capabilities, and it's very important to learn how to work on that. And science is essential. So if you let's start a little bit with the byproducts work, so our audience can learn a little bit about that, and then we move to the other part of your research work. So
absolutely. And one little thing I really like you mentioned about the word collaboration and the way you set it up for, which is I completely agree. And sometimes collaboration gets misunderstood as such a way that you're gonna obscure or gonna dilute your contribution or the focus that people could have actually on your team. And I'm completely against that. I guess it's actually a way to promote yourself is when we are involved in great challenges, right? And to solve a great challenge, you must collaborate with other people. And there's not many other paths for that. Otherwise, you would have to be experts in everything, right? So so especially for those that are starting the career, it is an investment we make when, since the beginning, we start collaborating with other people and think a little bit more about the successful accomplishments of a team rather than just individual accomplishments. Even though sometimes we get grades, let's call it this way, for individual accomplishments, but we can be very meaningful individually in collaboration efforts, and that's an investment we do for the future. So sometimes we get misguided on the way we are assessed, right? And especially at the beginning of the career, when we like to try to say, well, I need to sell this fish first, right, to show that I'm capable. Well, guess what? If you got the job, you are capable, or people believe in you, right? So start to invest in your future in collaborated teams rather than isolating yourself in a silo, right? So just anyways, you didn't ask me about that, but I just felt like a good opportunity to mention that. So good. So let me give you some hints over here, some of the byproducts work. And so we every two years or so we renovate our models over here with the surgically prepared, ruminally prepared animals and cattle, right? And so with surgeries in the rumen, and we see as an opportunity to that's one of the efforts we kind of lead every, that has a trigger every 2-3 years, which empower other things as well. But these animals have in this period that they were going to be passing through is very unique, because what we do is we have these animals that are all basically raised, they were weaned, and they were passing through that transition. They never received grains before, other than small supplements and during the winter. So when we prepare these animals, we see as a great opportunity to do step up or adaptation diets to a finisher diet, and as a unique moment because these animals have never passed through this before in their lives. So we have done multiple of these assessments, and perhaps is about time for us to be combining more of these things together and do more things like related to meta-analysis with our own data over here, actually, but which are actually working on it. But basically, using local byproducts that we have in the industry to address some of these needs, right? Some of these needs. So long time ago, I was tasked by the cotton industry over here, the gene industry, to not even task, is actually, because when you're tasked for something, you're given money, right? So I was tasked obsessed with the question from producers on the cotton burrs, or the is also called a gene thresh around here. I prefer the term cotton burrs, and because that stuff was for free, right? And it's basically roughage, a lot of fiber in there, low quality fiber, and a lot of ash issues they have in there. Sometimes you can get up to 25% ash, which is basically soil coming through the harvest of the cotton. So the point was, which was not funded actually, but it just serves as an example, because nowadays, if you go out there and you try to buy cotton burrs, you're going to pay for cotton burrs. You're going to pay maybe even $50 to $80 per ton, depending on a kind of the processing you're doing. But this is just an example, because even before this happened, our willingness to improve byproducts and making them fitting more our objectives in the industry happened even before there was the economical incentive for. And if we can think ahead of time in these things, you're going to be ahead of the curve later, because then you have the data to support that, right? So we can identify these things in advance. So what we did is was trying to improve the cotton burrs quality. And then we had some combinations with distillers' grains and cotton burrs on the preservation. We end up figuring out that we didn't improve the cotton burrs by any means. However, we decrease the losses in distillers' grains when it is preserved. We always like to think that when we put that beast inside the bag with distillers' grains, it stays identically as it is for in the future. But when we actually measure the gas losses during that storage process, you can have about 8 to 12% losses, which visually don't show up, right? So you actually get the same tonnage out, but you have different characteristics, right? So dry matter is being lost through some of the oxidation that is happening, similar to what it would happen with silage that we don't see visually, right? So it, basically the same concept. So we end up decreasing losses in distillers, and then we end up empowering a couple of genes over here around us to do additional sieving for the cotton burrs. And actually, now we have cotton burrs with better quality just because we are taking some of that ash out with some additional sievings, right? Things that the industry could do. And they were worried about tonnage, right? So now I'm sending a truck that is less heavier, right? Is lighter, but it's something with a better quality. So we're kind of showing the two sides of it, and then some of the industry actually adopting that, and then people starting to process these cotton burrs, chopping, right? So to address some of the issues we would have with the consumption of the product. Again, the research we did, it was just the triggering storage, improving of the quality, and using cotton burrs to adapt cattle to a finisher diet. That was the original idea, just I bring as an example, and then end up having fruits on several different areas. And I believe these end up happening with most of the research ideas and or efforts that we do around here. So the cotton burrs story is just one of them, but I hope it elucidates a little bit better on what we do with these byproducts and what we are looking for, right? Not just the feed quality inside the lab, but logistics, plugging in a strategy, right, and unleashing opportunities for new uses or industry implementations that we haven't thought before, even when we started the research. So it empowers people to come up with new ideas. So
no, this is great. I'm a storage person, so of course when I hear all these projects and think that gets me really excited, and of course also. I also do feed manufacturing, and so you know, it feed quality is very important for us. So no, this is great, sir. And then of course for our audience, share the video if you learned something new today with Dr. Sarturi. So as we move along, I see that you have do some research projects. They move into something else, and they continue to kind of cascade into different things, and I know that has triggered many things due to your background and the dynamics that you have there in your lab and different things. So moving into the a little bit more in the histological ruminants, cellular integrity. Can you tell us a little bit about your work related to that, so maybe our audience can learn something from that perspective too?
Absolutely, absolutely. So within the digest physiology realm, let's put that way, we have focused a lot of time on the metabolomics of things, on the, what are the metabolites that are produced inside the fermentation chamber called the rumen of these animals, of these beasts, and which are basically the consequences out of the metabolization of nutrients inside the rumen, right? So we're talking about volatile fatty acids, ammonia concentration, and we can go on and on in this list. Sometimes microbiome as well. We try to navigate a little bit on it. However, all these things have a connection, right? Have perhaps I shouldn't use the word however, but they do have a connection with development of tissues of the animal and tissues of interest, right? Like a muscle development or adipose tissue development. So that's why we focus on these things and how quick these ingredients can digest, right? So kinetics of digestion. So this has been, we spent a lot of time on this portion of it, to be very honest with you. However, now, using the word, between what is going on with these metabolites and the effects on the tissues, we have the absorption capacity for these animals. So I'm a true fan of Dr. Greg Penner from Canada, and we had a lot of conversations about these things, and he came here to visit us a couple of times as well at Texas Tech, and we find each other every year at animal science meetings. But I'm doing propaganda for Dr. Penner over here. It is just because he has a unique model over there that we are not replicating here at Texas Tech, but that he look at absorption through the tissues and everything. However, what brought us to a little bit more on this arena was on the development of this structure of the tissue that is actually doing this absorption. So, and if we think about rumen, for instance, we have the ruminal papillae, right? And the ruminal papillae, they have a structure by themselves which are actually not fixed by any means. These are life tissues that are under development, right? And we can actually measure this development through things, for instance, mitotic index. We can look at cells that are dividing. We can do histology assessments for that kind of thing. And that was the missing component, actually, we were having between studying the metabolomics and studying the final tissues, if they are increasing or decreasing or being affected by any means, was this in between, which was the integrity of these cells, that are actually absorbing these metabolites and nutrients, right? Let's call it this way. So that's what it brought us more to investigate a little bit more about these. And of course, when we bring graduate students that are interested in this arena and have some level of expertise, we got one of my PhD students was actually, he received a very good training from Dr. Danilo Milling in Brazil. He's at University of Jaboticabal now, but at the time it was in a different university in Dresena, but regardless, which was studying some of these assessments, and then when these graduate students passed through our team, we end up collaborating and investing more in this arena, and plugging that knowledge to other questions, other research questions, we end up figuring out a lot of very interesting things that we are actually capable to measure with repeatability, right? And that's one of the things in research. Are we capable to measure that difference? So then it gets away from the hypothesis to the real field where you can measure and detect the differences. And so that's what brought us more to this histology assessment of rumen. And we got some recently data going out showing that that's actually perhaps very close related to popular topics like, for instance, liver abscesses in cattle, right? And but touching a little different portion than what everybody else is talking about, which I believe is meaningful. And they at the end of the day, is a complex thing, right? Liver abscesses that has multiple reasons. However, we are within a portion of it that not very many people have talked about. And I see actually as a great opportunity for the feed industry too, because there is a connection there, feed, nutrients, barrier integrity, and this relationship with the liver abscess that we could actually find the evidence in some of our recent assessments.
Wow. Well, no, this seems very, very interesting. And of course, I will call that very hardcore science that you guys are doing there. And so very interesting, all your work. And as we come in a little bit at the end of the podcast, but before we move to that, just wanted to get you a little bit of a feeling. What's next for you in terms of research? What are you looking to do? Of course, I don't want to disclose any of your secrets there, of course, that when you're writing your proposal, things like that. But just thinking in a perspective that I know all your work is trying to help the industry, of course, overall, the cattle producers itself and other species, as you mentioned earlier. But what's next from that perspective? What do you want to do or what are you starting to do?
We have several fronts over here. I'm actually one of our university's research leaders for the integrated crop and livestock systems. So a lot of things we are working collaboratively, putting actually teams together for these that have been blessed, let's put that way, with this responsibility. And with a friend of mine over here at university, Dr. Alex Roccatelli as well. So we have been leading this effort. So a lot of things in that aspect, but I'll just put a seed in a connection to what I just mentioned about the tissues. So then it doesn't sound like a story halfway told. Let's put it this way. So for example, within this tissue integrity, we realized that we have a connection with animals with abscessed livers that have a lesser developed papillae in some portions of these papillae. And then we're investigating more, we open a can of worms, right? So we're investigating more about this portion of the papillae, which is the surface of the papillae. We can actually measure that in identifying the animals with liver abscess had less of this portion. And then the question becomes, what are the composition of these and how this portion of the papillae is synthesized and what is impact this? And then we end up seeing that if it is a tissue, if it is something physical that is there, it has a composition, right? And then some of this composition has been elucidating us that some perhaps amino acids that we usually don't formulate for because we assume that the rumen microbiome is producing everything we need, right? And then perhaps that's the big connection that could be. I don't want to say a big connection, but that's where we are investing more efforts now to see this amino acid profile and these amino acids, specific amino acids that are affecting the development of these papillae. So we have several things going on right now towards that direction. But anyways, and then if we think about amino acids, right? So then boom, feed industry, right? So we have talked about amino acids in dairy cows for a long time, and perhaps they are in front of us, the dairy industry always, right? In front of us and this type of work, but it comes together, right? At the end of the day, these are ruminant beasts, right? And we have shown some specific amino acids positive effect for dairy cows. And sometimes we don't have assessments to the same extent and level for beef cattle. And this, what we are doing is just basically one more example that yes, some of these things could be translated to beef cattle as well, even though right now we have a hard assumptions saying that whatever amino acid profile is needed is going through this small intestine because of microbial fermentation. So feed industry could be very well connected in this to help us on some of these specific amino acids that perhaps we have a duodenal imbalance for. But anyway, this is just to ask me for the connection. That's the connection I'm telling you, and we are investigating, right? So to proportionate more solid evidence before we think about mitigation strategy. So we like to understand why first.
It's time for our famous three.
You already know that the key to a profitable operation is healthy, productive animals. This starts with the quality and safety of your production inputs. Our team of experts at Kemin are driven by curiosity to develop science-backed ingredients and solutions to help you maintain feed and water quality, improve intestinal health, optimize nutrition, and eliminate pathogens. Learn more today by diving in at kemin.com/AG.
Great. No, this sounds very interesting, you know, and of course, we wish you the best on all that and happy to hear how that goes eventually. For our audience, of course, visit our site, wisenetics.com, to learn more about all our other podcast segments like poultry, swine, dairy, beef. This one, of course, feed mill, and our pet food, our companion animal one. So as we are closing the time, Dr. Sarturi, it's been a pleasure having you here. As we ask every guest that we have on this Feed Science podcast, we always like to know what would be your recommendation of your favorite book or resources that you look, especially, you know, you're an expert in your field, but what do you recommend somebody who is not an expert to look into it if they want to learn more about it?
Yeah, so you make me feel always about on how we get this information together and place it in an official way. So the first thing that comes to my mind is that our National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, working about in beef cattle, we have a very good version, improved version in 2016 of our green book over there on the beef cattle nutrient requirement model. So I would always encourage people to get that publication. We did a really good job at this time on making it thicker on such a way that we bring more explanation to some of the process in there. And I would say that shouldn't be your last word, but it should be the beginning of your investigation and your learning process. And the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine did a very good job in these publications, and they do for all of them. But I would brag about the 2016, which is the beef cattle model, and I would say that is a great start for everyone willing to improve or to learn more about actually the challenge that we have to face for information that we don't have yet.
Besides that, taking away your expertise, your area of work, what other is your favorite book or resource that can also you recommend anybody out there to leave? It could be anything about life, sports, anything that you think is good to, then maybe, you know, you share with your family, friends, or your grad students or people from your residence program.
All right. So one of the things that I really appreciate when people navigate a little bit beyond their area of expertise and they endure things that they perhaps thought that they were not prepared before, and they end up realizing that, well, you can be actually very good at that. And I see that a little bit of myself on it and my graduate students as well. And there is a book from a... He's a veterinarian, actually works at Merck, Dr. Fox, Lance Fox. And he wrote a book. It's called No Other Place Than Up, or No Place But Up, something like that. And believe it, No Place But Up. And he actually tells his journey on how he climbed Mount Everest. That's a long story made short. Wow. And then how did he start on that? What was the preparations? What are the things? He has a family, right? Has kids, right? And there is a lot of preparation involved. And this was actually a dream he had. And he had to conquer that and he had to prepare to that path. And he actually did conquer that path. And he wrote a book about that, Dr. Lance Fox, and it shows a lot of these small steps that we do in advance. That sometimes we get confounded with talent. Oh, we have the talent for this. Well, maybe you got the willingness and what it takes to prepare yourself to to conquer that. And people get confused with talent, right? Oh, he has the talent for this. Well, he got the skills acquired through preparation. And he tells that story and how he started in little mounts. I believe he's from Wisconsin and nothing like Mount Everest in Wisconsin, yeah, right? Okay. And how did he prepare himself? And he conquered that. It took several years, but he did. And I feel like we all have a little bit of that on discovering things that we can actually be very good at it if we give a chance to prepare ourselves for that. And that's kind of just a nice story on how he did to climb the Mount Everest. So,
no, that's great. That's great. And just to wrap up, what do you think makes, you know, you have your grad students, residence program, and I'm pretty sure you're also linked with undergrads, but what will be your, in your opinion, what sets aside successful professionals apart from those who are not? I mean, of course, success means many things depending on who you ask, but what sets apart, you know, somebody from that perspective?
Yeah, so it's internal, I guess, internal achievements, I guess two mainly things, and I don't want to be too abstract or broad on this, but I would put this in two main things. One is the internal accomplishments. Are we conquering things internally, virtues or goals that we have internally, which could be related to our body, which could be related to our feeling about accomplishments within the profession or even within our own families? Are we conquering these internal accomplishments? That would be the first one, because we are what we are internally, and then we start to exudate that externally in other different things in our professional, in our personal lives. But retrospectively thinking, are you conquering these internal accomplishments? And if you have not, if you don't know what those are, have you reflect about them? Because you need to have that solid. And as soon as you are conquering these, it's a life journey, right? As soon as you start to conquer this, the second thing would be, have you been exposed? You're exposing yourself to these learning opportunities. So then you can actually build and conquer your own dreams rather than be conquering somebody else's dream. Are you investing in entrepreneurship? Are you trying to conquer the professional things you want to conquer rather than just working for somebody and conquer somebody else's dream? There is nothing wrong with working for other people. I actually work for a university, right? But are we conquering some of our personal goals in career that I could invest in new learning in new arenas? So I just pose that as questions, right? So first of all, internal perseverance. And then secondly, are we exposing ourselves to the opportunity to conquer these other challenges externally, right? But always starts internally in reflection. So once we take that to the core, things will naturally, I would say, naturally happen. And time is meaningless. It is all based on perspective. Are my students losing time when they do a residency program with 6 months because they are not graduate students yet or 1 year? Well, perspectively, you can take that two different ways, right? But perhaps you take the positive way is you're investing on self-learning, on seeing your limits, on things that you need to explore more, so then you can engage in that next time, that next phase for your life. So I'm kind of mentoring them through this process by giving them the opportunity to endure this, right? So, and then at the end of the day, they can decide if they were losing time or not, right? So we can apply that to everything else in our life, right? Our kids, our personal relationships, our jobs, and making sure that we are internally satisfied, conquering our objectives before we think about please somebody else or a job.
No, that's great advice, and I think it's very important to things. And I was taking notes on that because I do like what you're saying a lot, and I really appreciate it. So we're coming to the end of the podcast, Dr. Saturi. Thank you very much for your participation today, all the great information from research, your personal life, and then, of course, recommendations on the technical side, and then for life and as future professionals or current professionals can look forward as advice. Thank you very much for that. And with that, for our audience, this concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very valuable to us. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University for the Feed Science Podcast, signing off. Thank you very much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.